Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Well, I'm very excited about this episode. It's the first in what will be an ongoing series within the Ordinary podcast on Ordinary Apologetics. Now, I'm a self-confessed apologetics nerd, but there are good reasons for that fact. I, like countless others, have been really encouraged in my own faith and have seen massive benefits in my ability to share my faith with those around me through studying the arguments which we're going to share with you. And the great news is, it's really not that difficult to get your head around them. So without further ado, let's talk about the moral argument for God's existence.
Hi, I'm Mark Bentham.
Hello, I'm Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. This week, we are starting the first in a kind of ongoing series that we're going to be calling Ordinary Apologetics. And we're going to be focusing today on what's called the moral argument for God's existence. Why don't we have a quick discussion before we get into the moral argument on what apologetics is and why we want to talk about it on the podcast?
I think it'd be good for you guys to take a little bit of a lead on this, because Josh, this is your favoured field, isn't it? Apologetics, you just love it.
Apologetics,
Graham,
nerd.
You spend a lot of time on the radio tackling these kind of issues. So what do you guys think? What is apologetics? Talk us through it and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, just to say, it is really practical. I mean, the most recent secular interview I did was on talk radio last week with James Whale, specifically on what was basically the moral argument. There'd been some research that had showed that people who are not believers in any religion still had a sense of morality and right and wrong, and there was a sort of commonality across. So the interview was about, you know, where does it come from? And James Whale, the presenter on that show, was basically making the biological argument. It's something about biology. That's the basis of morality. And he didn't really have a very strong argument, which is quite interesting. So it is something that people will talk about sort of in common culture. It's not so kind of scientific and out there.
And that's particularly the moral argument.
Yeah, but I think it's true. You know, other interviews I've done have been about dinosaurs and is it reasonable to teach creation, existence of God, and so forth. So I think apologetics is not obscure; it's kind of everyday.
Yeah, but what is it?
Yeah, no, I'm getting there. You want to know what apologetics
is?
Yeah,
define apologetics. What is it?
It is giving a reason and a reasoned explanation for the hope we have, particularly in Christ and belief in God. But it's that category of explanations, logical, scientific, reasonable explanations that kind of remove obstacles to belief. I think no one would ever argue that they force people to believe, but they remove commonly constructed obstacles to belief that people kind of build, which actually kind of get in the way of them listening to Jesus. So we want to kind of get rid of them. And they also help people who do believe, you know, for those moments of doubt to think, oh yeah, primarily it's both my reading of the Bible and my experience of Christ. But it is also really good that scientifically the Bible makes sense, logically it makes sense, archaeologically it makes sense. All those things are really helpful. You know, on our down days, in a way, it's a combination of experience, the work of the Holy Spirit, but also reason and argument and logic and truth. Because it's based on truth, you would expect it to be reasonable, and it is.
And because we're ordinary, we want to make sure that we're doing ordinary apologetics to help those listening to be able to just do this in their ordinary lives. Because lots of these arguments, although you were talking about it on the radio, it was talk radio, it's the kind of general population. These are the kind of issues that people are having to tackle, or the questions that come up in your conversations with your friends, our families, that come up in the everyday conversation when you talk about Christianity.
Yeah.
So part of what we're going to start regularly doing is ordinary apologetics, which will just start to tackle some of the more common objections to equip you to be able to help your friends and family members in understanding more about the gospel. Yeah. So today's one is the moral argument. You began to give us a hint of that. Who wants to kind of jump in and get going?
So the moral argument is, I think, one of the most practical and potentially easiest to start a conversation with somebody who's not a Christian. So I think by the end of the podcast, we want to start talking about how maybe you would do that, how you might get in there and start a conversation, you maybe using some of these arguments. But first, we're going to lay out the premises of the argument, which lead to the conclusion. And for this argument, there are just two premises. The first one is, if God does not exist, objective moral values do not exist. Premise two is, objective moral values do exist. And therefore, the conclusion follows logically, God exists.
Okay, so let's just break that down. Objective moral values, what do you mean?
Graham?
I mean that there is an absolute in the, not even the universe, but in everything, there is an absolute right and wrong. So they're objective in that they're not relative, they're not moving around, that there is a morality that is out there and in there and everywhere, and in everywhere certain things are right and certain things are wrong.
So at its basic, we all agree that murder is wrong. Would be one.
Well, in a way though, that's making the point that, is it about just what we agree is right and
that
wrong?
That would be premise two.
Yeah.
But for premise one, we want to just say, we want to ground the existence of something objective in the moral realm. So we want to say, we're arguing as Christians that if God didn't exist, then this idea of something objective, morally, doesn't exist. So, and I think it might be useful just to say objective is the complete opposite of subjective. So something that's potentially your opinion or your preference. Like I might prefer chocolate ice cream and Graham or Mark might prefer vanilla or strawberry. That is a subjective preference. There's nothing objective about that. There's no truth.
So objective, concrete.
Concrete, yeah.
Yeah, and the premise is saying, this first premise, this first kind of rung of the argument, is that it's impossible to have that if you don't have, in a sense, an independent, self-existent moral arbiter, moral originator, moral source, moral being, God. Because it can't just exist in the ether by itself, this morality. It can't just be kind of out there. People may think, well, there's a right and wrong in the universe, but it has to have both a kind of an origin and a source and a grounding somewhere.
So what would the argument back be? So how would the non-Christian, let's put out the best argument we can, what would be their best argument back on that?
On premise one, a good criticism might come back something like this. Can't we find objective right and wrong in nature, in evolution?
Yeah, that would be an argument to say that either it's there because of biology, or it's just a kind of function of nature that, like, it's just self-evident, like it's just there, it just kind of exists and it's there. A sort of modification of the argument would be that there's a biological necessity. So you might say, and particularly the guy I was being interviewed with the other day was arguing more, well, the reason we don't kill each other is because it will be not very good for the human race if we all killed each other. And so there's a biological reason that we do it, because we want to preserve the species.
Doesn't that go against evolution?
Well, quite so, it does. It collapses on itself to some degree, and it doesn't answer sort of many of them. But that would, many of the objections. But that would be an argument to say, yeah, it's all about preserving the species, and it's all about kind of protecting families and, you know, ordering societies so they work and all that kind of thing. And of course, as Christians, we would say that morality is not entirely arbitrary, that it does work well for the community because it's a good thing. So we wouldn't deny that there are usually good community reasons for moral behavior. You know, if we're faithful in families, it makes for better families. So we don't deny that there's that there's good in it, that, sorry, not good in it, there is benefit in it for the species, as it were, for the community. But we're saying it's quite extraordinary that, particularly when it comes to humanity, that there is a morality that seems to transcend that. We all experience that. And there is a sense of ought that goes beyond community benefit. There is a sense that when we see people suffering across the world, there is an outrage. There is a sympathy about it. And it's more than just something biological, because it has no impact on us biologically. And actually, for the good of the species, we might want to wipe out all those who are defective in some way. You know, we might want to annihilate the Jews as Hitler did, which are all sort of flowing out of evolutionary theory. And there are times when that has become more pervasive and might again, you know, we're thinking about euthanasia and infanticide now. But actually, we instinctively realize that's not right, that there is a value to human beings which is beyond utility. It's beyond, do they help the species? Do they advance the cause of the species? There's something more than that. There's something deeper than that. And there are things that we do in terms of faithfulness or unfaithfulness or truth and lies or attitudes of our heart that don't really have much benefit or detriment to the community, but we just know them and that they're just there. And so I don't think that argument holds a lot of water. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Josh.
Yeah, I just think it would be really useful to ask in that scenario. Well, when I think people like to talk about Hitler in these kind of scenarios, don't they? Because it's such a black and white example of wrong or what we perceive to be evil. Mm. I think you'd want to ask someone, by what standard are you asserting that his actions were wrong and evil? Is there something, a standard by which you are measuring his actions? And if there is not a standard by which you're measuring them, then it comes down to a difference of opinion ultimately. Yes. Yeah. And you have no authority to discipline Hitler or anyone who does something wrong other than through social pressure. But there's no actual objective standard by which that person has done something wrong. So if I then decide I want to go out and rob someone and I can live with the guilt, the consequences, that doesn't bother me, then by what standard are you going to tell me that that's wrong? Are you going to say, well, that doesn't really help society? Yeah, that might be true, but that still doesn't mean it's objectively wrong.
No.
I'm just doing something that you don't like.
Yeah.
So I think this is kind of why premise one is a strong premise for us as Christians, because and actually the atheists would agree with it. So there's a quote from Dawkins in which he kind of draws this out and says that he lays his cards out on the table basically and says that the universe is just, it looks just as if it would, as if there was no good, no bad, he says no evil, but just blind, pitiless indifference.
Yes.
That's how the universe acts. The universe doesn't care if I go and murder someone. It's only subjective. It's only value-based, which has evolved along with us and our minds and our capability to understand those things. And I think another place we might go to in response to this kind of idea of grounding objective morals in nature is to look at nature beyond humans and say, well, when a shark, let's say, forcibly copulates with another shark, it's not raping the other shark. It's just being a shark. So why is it different for humans? It doesn't seem like objective moral values can be grounded in nature.
That's a good point. I think with Dawkins as well, he ends up with this dilemma, doesn't he? Because he does say that about indifference, but then he says morality is a good thing. And in his book about religions, he goes around the world, particularly to the States, decrying certain religious leaders for their behavior. And in some cases, maybe it's right. They are hypocrites or they abuse people and all those kind of things. So it's all, we agree they're not good things. The weird thing is he has absolutely no reason to say that what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
He's got absolutely no reason to say that Christians teaching Christian truth has any moral significance at all.
Yeah. So and his outrage is unjustified.
Completely unjustified. And I think he kind of knows that because I think he does think there is a better and there is a worse, even though he can't really rationalize why it is, but he thinks there are better things to do. And I don't know his family situation or anything else, but you know, I think he likes probably family life and good experiences of walking the dog or whatever he does. I only know he walks a dog because a friend of ours we support in Hungary once met him walking a dog, right, and interviewed him when he was in Oxford. So presumably he still has this dog. But I assume he enjoys the experience of life like everyone else does, and experiences good things and then bad things, and thinks these bad things are rather painful and unpleasant. Mm. But if you were a consistent kind of amoral person, you'd say this has no meaning.
Yes.
And you create something just around personal pleasure. But I don't think anyone can live with selfish personal pleasure and satisfaction as the goal in life. It bubbles up every now and then, but I think we all realise that is just not right.
So the consistent position would be that actually each is free to do whatever they wish to do.
Mm. Yes.
Which is then just, it all becomes subjective rather than objective,
mm,
would be the consistent position.
Yes.
And presumably you would have to go push on and say, actually, we're no different to animals.
Yes.
Therefore, you would have to go with we're actually speciesisms or speciesists.
Yeah.
When we're against,
yeah,
when we say
humanity
is greater or more important, mm-hmm, than. So actually a consistent position would be pushed out, which, yeah, actually there was a story in the States about that, where a guy who was accused of rape claimed actually he was just fulfilling his evolutionary purposes, yeah, of being the strength. Now, if you're being consistent, you'd have to say that actually is a valid argument based on the position he's trying to hold. Mm-hmm. But yet we find it an affront, and the question is why?
Exactly. So, yeah, premise one, we want to say, if God does not exist, objective moral values do not exist. Why? Because there is no way to ground them as objective. So then we get to premise two, and we say, objective moral values do exist. So this is what you were just talking about, Mark. You said, but it does offend us when somebody does that. And so what we want to say here as Christians is, it is as clear as our understanding that reality, physical reality, exists around us. It's just as clear to us intuitively that moral values objectively do exist. So that when somebody does something, every time somebody does something you consider to be unjust and you say, hey, that was unfair, you're affirming that something they did there was objectively wrong.
Yeah.
When you want to hold someone to account, when you feel offended and upset that someone has murdered someone or raped someone, we intuitively know that that is wrong. And Michael Roos has a good quote here where he says, the person who says it's okay for somebody to torture and rape a child is just as wrong as the person who says 2 + 2 = 5. That, yeah, is our moral experience, yeah, that actually, no, objective moral values and duties do exist. We know it.
But in fairness, Dawkins would say, yeah, I know that to be true. But where it cashes out for him is that he would say, yeah, but it's not because there is a God.
Yes,
so,
but he
so
wouldn't,
they wouldn't disagree, yeah, on objective, no, moral values, would he?
He just wouldn't be able to ground them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think another place that it's evidenced is in terms of rightness and fairness in the treatment of people, that we all recognise injustice. So again, it may have no sort of society benefit or personal benefit, but if we're playing a game of football or something, you know, if a group of kids are playing a game of football, they will be outraged if someone cheats in some way. Now, because of their own sinful hearts, they might cheat too, but they will be outraged at cheating, even though it has no sort of, in a sense, no significance for the pack ultimately. But there's a sense of justice that is so embedded in us, that is so out there, that we think if there's a rule that you shouldn't kick someone in the shins, if someone does kick someone in the shins, they will be outraged at that as an injustice, which is kind of felt and known, or there will be guilt about that if one has done it. So I think in sort of trivial and in the big, we have a sense of outrage. We don't like people cheating to achieve something. We don't think that's okay, even though it sort of didn't hurt anyone in a sense. But if they somehow unfairly get to a position of power or get a job or break the rules in some way that achieves something for them, we don't think that's right. Or if they've done something bad, we expect there to be some kind of punishment, some kind of retribution. And it's the basis of society in a way, that there is such a thing as moral values.
Let's just move in. We've only got a few minutes left at the end of this podcast. Kind of terms of, okay, how do we help people then talk about this with our friends? I think we've explained the argument.
Mm-hmm.
I think most listeners would understand that. but how do I talk about it with my friend? Because my hunch is that if I was to talk to my friend, basically, and you were to even begin to explain that to, that they would just have no real answers.
Yeah.
They're not probably even got the Dawkins answer, well, it's biology. They probably just... Mm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So then where do you go from that? Mm-hmm. Or are we happy just to leave it?
Yeah, I think that often for me, conversations around the moral argument have started when somebody is expressing the fact that they're upset about something, some wrong, whether that's something in the news, something political, or something in their own life that they feel is unjust or they're upset with morally. And then you might ask the question, if it's appropriate, you might ask the question, why, by what standard are you upset with that? Why are you upset with that? Is it because you think that it was really wrong objectively? And you might have to explain the word objectively, but perhaps not. You might say, are you upset with that because it's objectively wrong? And they might answer that question. And that gives you an in to then say, well, where are you grounding that?
Yeah.
Because for me, the only place I can ground objective morality is in the existence of a moral lawgiver, who we call God. And if you don't have that, I don't quite understand why you're outraged about this thing. So that might be a way to, for me, I've found in experience that that's a way to start having the conversation. That doesn't answer your later question about where you go from there. But I found that quite good. Because I think the second premise of the argument, that objective moral values do exist, is the in. Because I think most people believe that.
But then they would they not just say, yeah, but it just is?
Yes, they might do. And then at that point, you would have to question that with premise one. Well, why? Why is it a case of it just is? Is there such a thing as a brute fact like that? And you'd have to begin to unpick that idea that actually it just is. Well, no, there needs to be a basis for that. You need to ground that in something. And you're either going to have to ground that in nature, which I think we can show doesn't work, or you're going to have to ground it in something beyond nature, which we call God.
Yeah. And I think that's a really helpful way in. I think even just at a, not a simpler level, but a different level, talking about right and wrong. Where do you think right and wrong comes from, if people ever talk about that? Or how do you work out what's right and wrong is a fair question to ask anybody. And that might be a way into talking about it. So it's not always... Would you like to hear the moral argument? It's never that. But people are talking about right and wrong all the time. People are talking about injustice. Mm. So it's not as though every time, you know, your child claims injustice, you have to explain, well, the reason you're asking about this is because, you know, you've got a moral basis. But sometimes it is the right thing to think, yeah, that's really interesting that you feel that way. You know, I wonder where that comes from. I think that's a good sort of question starter. I think just the sense of ought, just kind of developing with people, why do you actually have a sense of things ought to be this way, things ought to be fair, things ought to be just, we ought to not hurt each other? Where does that come from? Where does that sense of ought, where does that sort of compulsion come from? Is it just arbitrary? Is it just kind of out there, or is there some other basis for it? And kind of to try and develop that, because I think people are really struggling these days for sort of working out values, and although it's a bit intellectual, just getting them to think about what's the basis, what's the authority on which you're deciding things, and to say to people what's developing in our culture is where community or society or the state kind of is now beginning to decide what's right and wrong. And are we okay with that as a, not philosophical, but yeah, philosophical discussion. Are we okay with that? Does actually the state decide what's right and wrong, or is there such a thing as right and wrong kind of outside of that? So I think it, you know, greatly depends on the age and stage of the person.
But going on then, if the state do decide what is right and wrong, what is the basis for that as well, isn't it? It's always that one step back as well. One can have that conversation as well. It's probably worth saying though that this probably wouldn't be the slam dunk going to get them over the line kind of necessarily. It might do in God's goodness, but generally this is a kind of a really good way in to start talking about the bigger issues of of faith and to Christ in yeah. the end.
I mean, it's a classic in lots of evangelistic courses that we've done. So it will always come up because people will start to rail against God at some point during an evangelistic course and to say, that's not fair, God did that. That's not fair, God's going to judge everybody. And so you're into it quite often.
And it's a great question, isn't it? But why is it not fair then? You know, why are you worried by that? Why are you bothered by that?
Yeah. So it becomes this sort of discussion. I've often given the example of one of my auntie's funerals and a different uncle who was saying it's unfair. And, you know, pushing back to him and saying, well, why is it unfair? Or to what standard are you holding God? I mean, obviously, there's lots of other issues to do with death and why people die. But it's even the sense that you don't want to believe in God, but you want to hold God to some kind of moral standard is worth talking around to say, well, why should God conform to moral standards? Who defines the moral standards? Isn't it interesting that you think God should be good? you know, why do you think that is? Yeah, all that kind of stuff, I think, is what ordinary people like us can talk about. And often in these conversations, it depends on the context. You know, have you got hours? Have you got 2 minutes? You know, is it with a child? Is it an adult? Is it with an older person? Is it with someone who's highly educated? Is it with someone who's not highly educated? It makes a massive difference to how you talk about it. But I think for all those different categories, you can talk about it. You know, everybody, whatever their educational standards, has an opinion on right and wrong and on justice and injustice and how the world should be. So at least getting them to talk about, well, why have you got that? What do you actually think? And getting people to talk is definitely worth doing. But like with a lot of things we're going to talk about in apologetics, it's much more, as I was saying at the very beginning, about removing obstacles than it is about actually kind of scoring a goal. I don't know of many people who have become Christians on the basis of a discussion I've had with them about the moral arguments so much, but sometimes it just plants a seed that, or gets rid of an obstacle. I'm mixing all my metaphors up now, but it plants a seed that might, you know, grow into something eventually.
We often speak, don't we, of from Greg Kuchel's book on tactics, where you just put about a stone in their shoe.
Yeah.
That often this is a really good way of just kind of, you put the stone in their shoe that just makes them stop and think, where they're having to suddenly be confronted that their worldview doesn't quite add up.
Yeah.
And actually that's often all we can do. And actually this, I think this is probably one of those easy, ordinary ways that any of us can do it. Like,
I love that. That's
I think
a great
the whole
analogy.
The moral objective. Like, as soon as you say that, it sounds, oh man, what does that mean? But actually, when you start to talk about it, right, wrong, and I think any of us could just ask those questions.
Yeah.
And I think it stops people in their tracks because what you're trying to do is just get them to think, to start to think. Hold on, how I'm kind of making sense of the world does not make sense. It's not consistent. Yeah. So hold on, I believe that and I know that is absolutely, I can see right and wrong, but where I'm getting that from doesn't make sense. So is there a better answer? And what is that better answer? And that's what you're trying to get people to do with that, is just to think and to move on into the kind of begin to get an answer. And of course, Christianity is the worldview that is consistent, brings consistency.
And I think that what you're doing a lot of the time in these apologetic arguments is you're almost preparing the ground for the Jesus conversation. Aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're like you said, removing the obstacles, maybe planting the seed. You're making Christianity,
putting a stone in the shoe.
I love that one though, because it's exactly what it is. It's making them. It's confronting people with the illogical or irrational in their own thinking, and then eventually, of course, you want to get to the conversation about who is Jesus. But often I think it's useful before you have that straight up conversation about who is Jesus to say, well, do you think God exists? We're not talking about specifics yet, but just as a big general concept, to get them thinking about that before you launch it with Jesus. I mean, that's not to say you couldn't launch it with Jesus. I'm sure you could, but again, different people, different minds, kind of approach it in different ways.
Yeah. And as for the previous episode, we're really interested in your comments on this and questions. And maybe we didn't explain it very well, or maybe we explained it really well, but we'd like to hear either way.
Or share stories of how you've used it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And how perhaps you argue a bit better. Perhaps you've got an even better analogy than all the ones we've given about kind of how it works. So,
and the best story, we'll talk it through. Broadcast on the podcast.
You can write in confidence and we'll respect that. But if you want to write something that you're happy for us to share, then we'll share and give you a name check.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Ordinary. We hope you enjoyed it and found it interesting and hopefully useful. That email address for you to get in contact again is ordinary@cchh.org.uk. So feel free to give us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Do join us again next week for a new episode of Ordinary.